KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS Falls Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The Muscogee Nation will enforce some crimes committed by tribal members in the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's the upshot of a new agreement that ends a lawsuit by the tribe following the historic McGirt decision by the U.S. Supreme Court changing the state's tribal jurisdiction status. We'll hear more about what the agreement means and discuss tribal concerns over the fast-track migrant detention center being built in the Florida Everglades. We'll hear all about it right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of researchers have found gaps in how death certificates are maintained with implications for Native Americans' health. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Researchers from prestigious universities to indigenous communities studied death certificates from 2008 to 2019. They found Native Americans have a life expectancy of roughly 72 years old. The national average is 79. That's a much bigger gap than official stats show, says Jacob Bohr. He's an associate professor at the Boston University School of Public Health and the study's lead author.
American Indian populations have been subjected to deliberate policies of physical and cultural erasure for centuries. These patterns have contributed to today's economic and physical marginalization and deprivation and to poor outcomes in these populations.
Bohr and his team uncovered another problem. Death certificates for at least 40% of Native Americans failed to identify them as American Indian or Alaska Native. In most cases, their race was misreported as white. I'm Caleb Radel.
The U.S. Postal Service recently unveiled four forever stamps celebrating powwows. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio spoke with the artist behind the collection.
The Gathering of Nations, held annually in Albuquerque, is where this new collection was released back in April.
Let's dance with good spirits. Pray with good love and energy. Here we go, Gathering Nations powwow, Saturday night live. Make that noise, let them hear it.
These tiny pieces of postage are in part brought to life by performers Tony Duncan, his wife Violet, and their eldest child Manaya. Four designs, each honoring a different style of dance, traditional, fancy shawl, crow hop, and hoop. Now let the New Mexico-based painter who designed the Forever Stamps tell the rest of his story behind handpicking the Duncan family.
Hi, my name is Mateo Romero. I'm a tribal member from Coach du Pueblo. I'm a contemporary Southwestern painter, and I've worked on the USPS Forever Sheet stamp, the powwow series, with the Duncan family and with Cammie Jo Whiteclay. I don't know of a way where an artist could sort of catch the attention of USPS. It just happened organically. I was very flattered. I was very honored to do it. It's actually not easy to take a painting and translate it into a stamp. I did four paintings for USPS, which I think they were like 24 by 30 inches. And then to make it into something the size of your thumb, that's actually a little tricky because it has to really carry color. But I think they did a really good job. I mean, I think the colors are clear and the shadows are nice and the faces pop out. That's really what I was trying to do, was capture the sort of visual analog of what it might be if you were at a powwow and you're looking at dancers and you could hear the sound of the drum behind you. And so I think they move in that direction where they're beginning to resonate like that, sort of give people maybe the visual cues of what it might be to actually be there. It's really their story, you know, that's the cool part about it. I mean, I'm the painter and I've created this message and I've put it out there. People seem to like it. But the story really is their story, right? It's their family and their energy. They actually, in this respect, have become the face of powwow for this moment to the world.
That was Mateo Romero. The story was produced by Gabriel Pietrazio, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Skuktash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show.
Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Florida officials are busy transforming an old abandoned airport into a facility that will hold up to 5,000 migrants awaiting deportation proceedings. But there's a problem. Tribal officials say the fast-track plan for what officials are calling Alligator Alcatraz endangers land, water, and cultural sites long considered important. So far, there's little movement to address tribal concerns. We'll hear about this issue a little later in the show. First, we want to take you to Tulsa, where some traffic violations, first-time drunk driving violations, and other misdemeanors will be handled by Muskogee Tribal Court instead of city and county judicial systems. That's only if the defendant is a tribal citizen. The groundbreaking step comes as cities in Oklahoma continue to work through ramifications of the landmark 2020 U.S. Supreme Court McGirt decision that concluded the state was improperly prosecuting crimes on what should have been considered tribal jurisdiction all along. You can join today's conversation by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. Give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let us know your thoughts, share your insights and perspectives. Joining us now from Oklahoma City is State Representative Scott Fettgatter. He is the House Leader of Tribal and External Affairs. He is a citizen of the Choctaw Nation and originally from Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Representative Fettgatter, hello and welcome to Native America Calling.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Joining us from Portland, Oregon is Robert Miller. He is a law professor at Arizona State University and also a tribal judge. He is Eastern Shawnee. Bob, good morning and welcome back to NAC.
Thank you. Yes, it's still morning out here.
And a lot cooler than Tempe, so I appreciate that. I'm glad you're laying low this summer there and enjoying some more mild weather. Joining us, our third guest from Okmulgee, Oklahoma, is Jason Salzman. He is the press secretary for the Muskogee Creek Nation, and he's also a Muskogee citizen. Jason, hello to you, and welcome to the show.
It's Jay, everyone. It's an honor to be here, and I'm coming to you from the 49th Annual Muskogee Nation Festival, where we'll welcome over 50,000 guests to the Okmulgee area this weekend for a big party of culture and all things Muskogee Creek. So I'm fired up to be here.
It sounds like you got a great weekend planned, Jason. Appreciate you taking the time to join the show today. And I want to begin with you. Let's talk about this agreement with Tulsa Mayor Monroe Nichols. What did it take to reach this agreement, and why do you think it's finally coming together now?
Well, we're just excited because I think it took a mayor and a public official that saw the need to get out of the courtroom and get to a round table and sit with tribes, sit with tribal officials and respect tribal sovereignty and say, look, we can litigate this till we're all blue in the face and we're all broke and we've all paid lawyers all this money and we've wasted taxpayer funds, we've wasted time. Let's sit down and meet these demands. And let's start talking about real solutions to realities. And the reality is that this reservation in the Muskogee Nation was never disestablished. The Supreme Court has said so. And because they have said so, they hold Congress to its word, and they hold this reservation intact. And because of that, we've got to work together with our partners. We do, by and large. The things that you see on the news where there's chaos or confusion comes from a very small group of people that don't want to let go of say-so over civil matters, over court fees coming in to municipal and local governments. By and large, it's people like Representative Fettgatter, like Mayor Monroe Nichols, that are saying tribal sovereignty is reality. Let's work together. These tribes are an incredible impact on our state economy, on our state progressivism and progress. There is nothing here that says that there should be any impediment on us moving forward. Let's get out of the courtroom. Let's get into the meeting room, and let's hammer out some details to make this a progressive and prosperous reservation. And that's what's happened here. And I really feel like, Sean, this is the way. I feel like this is a sea change moment. If the largest city on our reservation, Tulsa, can say, folks, this is how you do it, then I think the other municipalities now will fall in line, and it will be something that is seen as the way to do it and the example. This is the standard. This is how it's done. Let's stop fighting. Let's stop getting in court. Let's stop the litigation. Let's work.
Jason, give us some more details here. What happens now if a tribal member in Tulsa is charged with a crime, or even if they receive a traffic ticket? What do they need to understand? And also, some people might just be curious here. I mean, will Muskogee police be patrolling the streets of Tulsa?
Well, they already do. Our light horse are in different regions of the reservation. The northern region certainly has light horse patrol. We even have headquarters up there for light horse, and our all the way to our southern region, which reaches just a little south of the town of Eufaula. And so they already are. And we have a cross-deputization agreement with over 70 agencies. So that includes Tulsa. That includes the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. That includes Tulsa Sheriff's Office even. And what happens is, if you will, if you're a tribal citizen and a Tulsa policeman pulls you over for a traffic offense, that cross-deputization means he just simply takes that Tulsa police hat off and throws on a Muskogee light horse hat, figuratively, of course. He's not rolling around with having to change hats. But what I'm saying is he just simply transforms for the that ticket. He transforms for that traffic stop to a light horse police. And that case simply goes to tribal court, where it's supposed to be, because it's a tribal citizen within the reservation. Now, if it's a major crime, that can go both to tribal court and federal court. The one place it will not go is to state court or municipal court for a city under the state of Oklahoma's charter. So basically, what it does is, it says, tribal citizen on the reservation, no matter what, major crime, misdemeanor, regular crime, municipal crime, it will go to tribal court, or if it's a major crime, federal court.
Okay, and these could be any tribal citizens, not just folks from Muskogee.
Anywhere,
as long as they're enrolled somewhere.
Any tribal citizen, if they're a federally recognized enrolled citizen of a federally recognized tribe and they're within the reservation, they are under the jurisdiction of the Muskogee Creek Nation Court. Yes.
Okay. Jason, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt, he's been very vocal, publicly criticizing the agreement. He even went so far as saying it makes Tulsa a sanctuary city. It's also been criticized by the Tulsa County District Attorney and the police chief. What do you say to them, and why are some parties so opposed to this agreement?
Well, before we came on the program today, he said I couldn't say any profanities. So, no, I'm just... I'll be careful here. Really, for the last 5 years, we've had to deal with this inflammatory rhetoric, and it has to stop. We've had things said like tribal citizens aren't paying tolls, and so when you see a red tag, you should know that that person is cheating the state out of Oklahoma out of money that you're paying. They're not paying. You're paying. So it's unfair. That kind of talk, which is false, puts our tribal citizens as a target. If they have a tribal tag on their car, that kind of talk puts them as a target. Sanctuary city talk, obviously, Oklahoma, a very red state, gets a lot of people inflamed, gets a lot of people fired up. Sanctuary city, what's this talk? All they hear is sanctuary city, and they go blank. There's no thought of, well, what is the actual mechanisms here of tribal sovereignty and of a sovereign nation within a state? What are we dealing with here? They just hear that kind of rhetoric, and it inflames people. And it's very, very unfortunate. And thankfully, we have people like the gentleman on this call, Representative Fettgutter, that has the courage to come out publicly and say, you're not doing a good job of disagreeing. You said that we should disagree better. You're not following your own language. So let's stop this false rhetoric. Let's talk. And Mayor Nichols this week said himself that this kind of agreement that we have with Tulsa, if this would have been done July 10th, 2020 from the governor, imagine how far along we'd be right now and how much money we could have saved for taxpayers in meritless litigation that was never going anywhere. We're batting like 867 against this governor in lawsuits, which is pretty good last time I checked. And so we are at a position that the law is on our side. If we continue to litigate, we're going to continue being on the right side of the law. We do not want to continue to litigate. We want to work together. We want this thing that happened with the city of Tulsa. We want that to happen with the governor. We do not want a contentious relationship with the governor. We just want a relationship, period. He's been down to the complex one time since I've been press secretary for the past 5 years. I've seen him one time, and it was to come see our vaccination process for the health and to applaud us for our vaccination process. Imagine that now, him applauding a vaccination process. So that's how long it's been, and we really need better communication, and we need better participation in fruitful dialogue and everything like that. As long as we're doing this sanctuary city stuff and the tribes, citizens are not paying their fair share stuff, we're never going to be able to get anything done. And we're just going to have to wait out and wait for his term to end and hope we get a governor that's a little bit better with tribal sovereignty. But we don't want that. We want to be able to work right now. And the invitation is open.
Jason, thank you. Really appreciate you taking the time to educate our listeners today. I want to share a disclaimer. We did reach out to Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt and the Tulsa County District Attorney. We did not hear back by showtime. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back, and we will speak with State Representative Scott Fettgutter. We'll get his perspectives on this recent agreement that was reached between the Muskogee Nation and the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Stay with us. Be right back.
Ever since the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound, EAC Athabascan Dune Lankard has been a strong voice for protecting endangered habitats on indigenous homelands. Lankard just won a prestigious culinary award for that work. We'll hear from him and learn how a group of native ranchers and food sovereignty groups are working to get bison meat into Great Plains schools. That's on the menu on the next Native America Calling.
Support for this program is provided by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles the issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. What AARP does might surprise people. For more information and resources, including member benefits, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org.
Thank you for tuning in today to Native America Calling. We're hearing right now about a significant development in law enforcement jurisdiction in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Muscogee Nation just signed an agreement with that city's mayor that divides up some criminal prosecutions depending on whether they involve tribal citizens or not. You can join this conversation today by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's talk now with State Representative Scott Fettgatter. He joins us from Oklahoma City. He's the House Leader of Tribal and External Affairs. And Representative Fettgatter, Jason Salzman certainly didn't mince any words there with regards to his thoughts with regard to Kevin Stitt and some of this opposition against the agreement we're talking about today. And you also publicly took Governor Stitt on over his comments about Tulsa becoming a sanctuary city. What was it about those comments that felt you needed a response? And what are your overall thoughts on the agreement?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. And I would not expect Jason Salzman to ever mince any words about anything. He's going to tell you exactly what he thinks, which I hope is the reputation I have as well, because I think it's important to say the things that people are thinking that they don't want to say. And that's why people elect us to represent them, is because they hope that we will go say what they are thinking and what they believe and how they feel. I have no ill feelings towards the governor. I just vehemently disagree with him on his handling of tribal relationships across the state of Oklahoma. And I'm not afraid to say what I think, and I'm not afraid to tell the governor what I think. I've sat in his office right across the table from him and told him exactly how I feel. I'm in a really unique position because while I serve the state of Oklahoma, I'm a Choctaw citizen, and I live in and represent the counties and in my district that encompass the Muscogee Nation. And so I grew up in Old Mogie, and I live just outside of Old Mogie right now. And so my perspective on it, on everything, is I am glad to see the Muscogee Nation, Chief Hill, his staff, his leadership team, the council, and I'm glad to see the mayor of Tulsa, Monroe Nichols, which Monroe Nichols was actually a member of the House of Representatives, and he and I got elected together. He and I have a relationship together and a friendship, and even though we disagree on a lot of issues, as I'm a conservative and he's a Democrat, so we had many arguments, but we still maintained decorum. We still maintained a relationship and a friendship that went outside of that the House chamber and the legislature. As far as what they've done is exactly what Speaker Hilbert and I discussed whenever he appointed me to this leadership role in the House, was we are missing opportunities to work together with our tribal partners, and we need to have better dialogue. We need to have better conversations. We need to be able to disagree without being disagreeable. We need to be able to have civil discourse and work on solutions. There's no doubt that the McGirt ruling had drastic effects and impacts on our state, on our state. I mean, it just absolutely is a fact. It changed a lot of things, but the narrative has been, oh, these Indians are going to come take all our land, and they're going to come blah, blah, blah. Well, it's just all bunk. It's just all fear tactics. It's all scare tactics. It's just out of control, mm-hmm. bad. Mm-hmm. And I would say to the governor, if he were sitting across from me right now, I would look at him and say, stop, just stop. I had tribal nations in my office for 4 months while we were in session working on tobacco compacts. I'm not an attorney. I'm just a guy who got elected. I'm just an average citizen that got elected. I have to really dive deeply into these issues to understand them, from a guy with a construction background. So if I can do it, Governor, you can do it. dive in, understand the U.S. Constitution, understand the agreements with the tribes and the treaties, understand how they, you know, affect our state in particularly differently than, you know, any other state. And so, but his problem is he hasn't wanted to take that deep dive. And if you sit across the table from him, you understand why. I mean, he's a different mindset. He's not a detail guy. He's not, you know, he's going to take what, you know, his general, general counsel tells him or his chief of staff. And that's what he's going to run with.
Okay.
Well, you cannot do that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because debates like what we're hearing right now, they make for great social media posts, and they make for great, you know, sound bites and things like that. But for citizens living there in the Tulsa area, native and non-native alike, who are actually living through how these policies and how these laws are interpreted, you know, they might not see it quite that way, and they might stress a little bit over what's going on. And I'm curious to know, how can tribes and neighboring local governments, or even the state government there and the governor's office, how can they work more effectively together to create these agreements that are going to be beneficial for all Oklahoma citizens, while at the same time adhering to the jurisdictional leverage that the U.S. Supreme Court had affirmed in 2020? What are your thoughts there?
Well, my thoughts are just this. You are absolutely right. I get calls as a representative for the state. I get calls from people all the time. I had a sitting staker tell me he was afraid that he was going to lose his land to the tribe that he had worked so hard to keep, and that's why he wasn't supporting my efforts on. So, to the average citizen that's sitting there, you know, saying, "What in the world is going on?" The problem is, your leaders are not sitting at a table and working it out. And kudos to the mayor of Tulsa and the Muskogee Nation leadership for sitting at a table and saying, how do we fix this problem? Because some people would say, well, it's not a problem. Well, it's not a problem in that, you know, the ruling is the problem. The problem is that there are details of how the ruling affects the average citizen in the state that needs to be hammered out. And to, you know, Jason's point earlier, instead of litigating this in court for the next 20 years, let's sit at the table and say, okay, how do we make this work? Cross-deputization, that was in effect way before I was ever elected. And that was due to the efforts of members of the state legislature and members of law enforcement and members and citizens of the Muskogee Nation sitting down in leadership saying, let's sit down and let's talk about cross-deputization. How do we help? And in fact, there are some communities in Oklahoma where Muskogee Light Horse is all they have, or, you know, whatever tribe, you know, tribal jurisdiction they're in. They don't have city police officers. They don't have municipal police officers. So they have sat down and said, hey, how do we work with the tribe to enforce, you know, laws? And so cross-deputization was a great step in the right direction, and that happened prior to McGirt. McGirt just threw out this narrative, and the narrative, you know, and that's all it's doing. Whenever the governor called Tulsa a sanctuary city for criminal Native Americans, that was across the line. It's bombastic. It's fear-mongering. And I could pay for it through some type of political campaign or something, but I don't care. What's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. And what is wrong is causing citizens fear of the unknown.
Representative Fettgatter, thank you for coming on the show. I know your time is limited, so I want to be respectful of that, but appreciate all your perspectives and all of your insights, and it'd be great to bring you back on another show to hear more.
Anytime.
Thank you. Let's bring Robert Miller into our conversation now, law professor at Arizona State University, also a tribal judge, excuse me. And Bob, you've been on our show many times. We've discussed the McGirt decision at length. You've written a book about the McGirt decision. It's been in place for 5 years now. Tell us more. How big of a step is this agreement with the city of Tulsa in affirming the Muscogee Nation reservation boundaries?
Well, the agreement is exactly what the Supreme Court hoped would happen. Justice Gorsuch wrote the opinion July the 9th, 2020, and he pointed to all of these cooperative agreements that tribes had with states, that the with Oklahoma, that the representative was just talking about. And even in this situation, this cross-deputization agreement between the Muscogee Creek Nation and Tulsa has been in existence since 2006. So this is what the Supreme Court hoped would happen, and Justice Gorsuch warned all the parties, gosh, if there's 20, 30 years of litigation, then perhaps even Congress could step in. And I think the last thing the tribes would want would be for Congress to step in. So we do want tribal governments to work with the governor, but we need the governor to work also. Now, I want to make one very strong point. This statement about sanctuary cities is, yes, just bunk, as the representative just said, but it's also false. Tribal people in Tulsa are subject to the jurisdiction of both the Muscogee Creek Light Horse Police and the Tulsa Police because of this agreement. Yes, the Tulsa Police will ultimately turn the prosecution over to the tribe, but a Native person in Tulsa is subject to two law departments. So to call this a sanctuary city is so false, and yes, is political spin, trying to bring in immigration and sanctuary cities like that. So back in my book and in the very first article I ever wrote on McGirt, in fact, the day the opinion came out, my wife woke me up and said, I think the tribe won. And I downloaded the opinion, started reading it, and have been writing on it ever since. I have called this case a bombshell. And it is a bombshell on all three governments, the federal government, the Muscogee Creek Nation, and the state of Oklahoma, because Oklahoma's jurisdiction was severely limited. Tribal and federal jurisdiction were vastly increased. I calculated that the Muscogee Creek Nation had about 135,000 acres of tribal land, what we would call Indian country for the Muscogee Creek, in July 8th. 2020. The next day, the opinion comes out, and we find out the reservation is re-recognized as its original 3.25 million acres. The Muscogee Creek jurisdiction and responsibility increased by 25 times. So that's why I call this a bombshell, and it's a challenge to all three governments. And so, of course, it would be better if they could work together like Tulsa and the tribe has done here, exactly like the representative was just discussing, and exactly the way Justice Gorsuch and the Supreme Court hoped it would turn out.
Okay. Bob, I want to ask you about a statement that was made by the Tulsa District Attorney, who said that cases that could be handled in state court are now being sent to a place where maximum punishment is 3 years. He also said that's not justice for victims. How do you address concerns that justice will not be served under tribal court, or does it in any way take any power away from the state?
The state's jurisdiction is limited. There's no question. I've had some state judges tell me just privately when I've been at conferences in Oklahoma City that their workload was way down. And the Supreme Court recognized that, yes, maybe the state would need less DAs, less police, less judges, but that would have to be ramped up on the tribal side and on the federal side. And both the feds and the tribes are doing this. So there is a time of adjustment. Tribal criminal jurisdiction only extends to the misdemeanor level. So felony offenses, nobody in Tulsa is at risk. No victim will not receive justice because the tribe is prosecuting only to the misdemeanor level, 1 year in jail. And yes, there is a federal law that allows tribes to use federal prison and up to 3 years. But that is the extent of tribal jurisdiction. And so for a tribal person who commits a felony on a reservation, it's the federal government. It's the federal government's responsibility to bring that prosecution for felony situations. Let me make one more point to you, Sean, that needs to be brought out. Oklahoma is only now facing what every other state in the country already faces if they have tribes in their state borders. This division of jurisdiction, these unique issues of federal Indian law and tribal jurisdiction apply elsewhere. I live and work in Arizona. 27% of our state is Indian country. And the state fought this in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s and lost multiple Supreme Court cases. Finally, it seems that Arizona and the tribes get along pretty well. Well, so I equate what happened to Oklahoma, and that's why I call the McGirt decision a bombshell. In one day, we found out that 49% of the state of Oklahoma is Indian country. My tribe and other tribes had their reservations re-recognized too. So Oklahoma, in a very, very fast, quick moment, is having to appreciate what every other state in the United States deals with. It's nothing unique. These problems can be worked out. And this is exactly what the Supreme Court hoped could be done through negotiated compacts.
Bob Miller, legal expert, law professor at Arizona State University and also a tribal judge, weighing in on this agreement between the Muscogee Nation and the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've got the phone lines open, folks. If you'd like to join this conversation, what are your thoughts with regard to how crimes are prosecuted now there in Oklahoma or elsewhere? Or maybe you're in a different part of the country, but you've been in a situation where you've been possibly involved in some sort of a jurisdiction dispute. And you can weigh in as a native person what it was like for you to experience that. And there could be parallels between what we're talking about today and what you've experienced or what you can share. So you can do that by calling us at 1-800-996-2848. We've got the phone lines open and our producers are standing by waiting for your call. That 1-800-996-2848 number, that'll connect you with our studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And you can share your thoughts with all of our listeners on all the different stations that carry Native America Calling every day, Monday through Friday, live. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support by Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo Companies for shipments to rural Alaska, for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
You're with us today on Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We're going to hear now about some concerns by tribes regarding the current redevelopment of an abandoned airport in Florida into a detention center for the country's ramped up immigration enforcement efforts. But before we do that, I'm going to take a caller, and I also have one more question for Robert Miller before we move on to this new topic and a new guest. So let's go ahead and go to the phones, where we have Akimi, who is listening in Gallup, New Mexico on station KGLP. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Yat'e Analtwa. I just wanted to share my opinion as a member of the Diné Navajo Nation. I think that it's very important and wonderful for Native tribes to start moving towards a way where we do have authority and jurisdiction to prosecute non-Natives who commit crimes against Native Americans on or off the reservation.
Okay, you're talking about non-Natives, though, prosecuting non-Natives. Yeah. Bob, can you respond to that there? Because this is a little bit of a pivot from what we're talking about today with regard to this agreement, I think.
Yes, it is a pivot, but I'm glad she made this point. This shows that even though tribes have sovereignty in this area, it is a perhaps limited sovereignty because they are not allowed to prosecute non-Indians. The Supreme Court decided that in the Oliphant case in 1978. And so now, vice versa, Oklahoma's found out it can't prosecute certain people that commit a crime in a certain area, perhaps inside the state. So it's tit for tat. It's fair. And so for Governor Stitt to be talking in his outrageous way about that this is unfair and risks Oklahoma citizens, it's ridiculous. So okay. She makes a very interesting comment that something like 85% of the domestic violence and crimes against Native women are by non-Native peoples, and tribes don't have criminal jurisdiction over that situation. Although, let me say, Congress amended the Violence Against Women's Act in 2013, I believe the date, and did give tribes criminal jurisdiction over non-Indians for domestic and sexual violence type crimes. So there is a window there of tribal criminal jurisdiction over non-Indians.
All right. Really appreciate that call coming in from Gallup, New Mexico. Bob, one more question. The Muscogee Nation will be having to handle more court cases now, and you've got experience as a tribal court judge. How can they or any other tribe prepare to handle these much larger caseloads like this?
Well, thank you for the question. One of the attorneys for one of these tribes, I was at a conference about 2 years ago, and he said McGirt has opened a fire hose on the tribes. I thought that was a unique way to word it. But what I've been writing from day one, the responsibility on the federal government has increased by 25 times because Muscogee Creek territory has increased 25 times. And so the same for the tribal government. And I see in the statement by the tribe and by the news reports about this agreement, Principal Chief David Hill, I believe, he says he's very proud of how the tribe is ramping up its police department, its prosecutor's department, its judicial capacities. Tribes will have to increase capacities for jails. Something like only 95 tribes out of the 574 recognized even have tribal jails. So they have to have agreements with city and county jail systems to incarcerate people. So all of this takes cooperation and governmental agreement. And again, I repeat, that's what Justice Gorsuch and the Supreme Court hoped would happen and planned would happen instead of litigation and conflict for 50 years.
Okay. Bob Miller, I always appreciate when you come on the show. I always learn something new every time I talk to you and read any of your writings as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and pivot again here, and we're going to talk more about what's been dubbed Alligator Alcatraz. This is this abandoned airport in Florida that's being refabricated into a detention center. Tribal officials from the Miccosukee and Seminole Nations put out statements condemning the construction at the facility just outside of the Florida Everglades. They say it poses a harm to important land and cultural sites. And yes, officials have dubbed the new venture as the Alligator Alcatraz. So you can join this conversation if you're informed on this issue, 1-800-996-2848. And I want to now introduce another guest who joins us from the Florida Everglades. This is Betty Osceola. She is an environmental educator. She is Miccosukee. She's been on the show many times before. Betty, hello and welcome back.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing really well. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And let's talk about this decision by the federal government to create an immigration detention center in the Everglades. It's really galvanized tribal leaders and members like yourself to protest. What has spurred this condemnation?
Well, you know, one thing I would like to say is I don't protest. I educate. And people like to use the word protest and label what we do as a protest because that's, they know that word is going to trigger division. And me being a spiritual person, I come and pray for the landscape, and I try to create understanding of how we understand this environment and how we need to be human beings again. Because all this activity that the governor is, you know, all this effort to do this detention center and incarcerating, you know, human beings, that's not being a human being. And we're trying to educate that we need to come back to what, you know, to being, you know, honorable to our fellow human beings and to ourselves. And, you know, they keep trying to say this is an abandoned airfield. This area is a wasteland. One, it's not abandoned. There's panthers out here. There's raccoons out here. There's all this wildlife out here. It's not abandoned. And that's what I'm trying to educate about. The environment is live and thriving. And that's the big disconnect that society has with the natural world. And that's our big problem that creates this, these issues with each other in these conflicts. And tomorrow, we plan to continue educating about why they need to not do this. Because, you know, our tribal people, this place provided us a home when during the Seminole Wars. It provided us a refuge for us to continue. Our ancestors would not be here. They fought, they lost their lives. So I could be here today, and I have to turn around and stand up to protect the very environment that allowed me to be here today. And this, they say, oh, we're not destroying the Everglades. It's right in the middle of the Everglades. The Big Cypress National Preserve is a part of this Everglades ecosystem, and it's a home for the voiceless that need me to stand up to talk for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Betty, tell us more about the impact that this could have on wildlife, and especially the alligator population. When here they're dubbing this facility Alligator Alcatraz.
You know, they're doing a disservice to the python and the alligator, because alligators, I've been out here, you know, ever since all this nonsense started, and I grew up out here, and I have not yet had an alligator try to attack me, and I have not had a python try to attack me. If anything, alligators will run from you. The only time you have to worry about an alligator, if you're not smart enough to stay away from, you know, their babies. If you pick up that baby and it starts crying, just like a human mom, you know, that mom is going to defend her babies. The same thing with a python. If you leave it alone, it's going to leave you alone. If you go and try to grab it, yeah, it's going to fight back because it feels threatened. Other than that, you know, these, you know, they're, I guess, people who don't understand that don't realize that the alligators and pythons are not going to be a threat. If anything, they have to worry about the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes don't care who you are. They're going to bite you and suck your blood, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like that's one of the thoughts, is that people wouldn't be able to escape because there's nowhere to go. They would be stuck there in the Everglades. There would be dangerous animals and creatures and hazardous conditions. But you know that area very well. You've lived there your whole life. Is that accurate?
All these cars go by. This place is like not even a mile from the road. And I'm watching car after car after car go by. All they have to do is come out to the road and hitch a ride somewhere.
Betty, Governor Ron DeSantis, he's using emergency powers to build this facility. What issue do you take with him using emergency aid to build this detention center?
Well, I'm wondering, when a hurricane hits and he spent all this money here, how is he going to help Floridians? All these FEMA trailers that they brought in here, I mean, we saw hundreds and hundreds of FEMA trailers going in. And since we've been posting about it and going live videos about this on Facebook, I have Floridians saying that, you know, there's, when they tried to get a FEMA trailer, there was so much red tape, they never got a trailer when their home was destroyed. But yet, here's all these FEMA trailers on this airstrip. Very interesting.
Okay. Betty, the last time you were on the show, you spoke at length about the cultural and spiritual importance of the Everglades. Florida officials and their understanding of the significance of this land to Native people. What do you think is driving this disconnect?
Their disconnect from nature. Because when I saw the press on Mr. Utmeyer and DeSantis, it shows how much they don't understand nature and what nature does, because we cannot exist without nature. And they look at nature as a way for exploitation to make money off of this, because this is an emergency. You know, they, from what I understand, they were out here in February looking at this airstrip. They were planning all along. Some of these private, one of the private contractors, I understand, became a company in February. So somebody got insider information somewhere. So this issue, this situation is something they created. An emergency is like a hurricane. An emergency is like a wildfire that just, you know, a lightning strike starts. An emergency is an earthquake, a tidal wave. Here, they're fabricating and making this appear to be an emergency when it's not.
Okay. Betty, I want to talk about the site there that was once an airstrip. What was the effect of that activity on that site for all those years while it was in operation? And has there been any improvement in the environment in the years since it's been out of commission?
Well, actually, when the Big Cypress Preserve was created to stop the construction of the world's largest airport. And what we have here is what they started constructing, and then they were forced to stop. And this preserve was created to stop development. So what occurred was, if it hadn't been stopped, if this preserve wasn't created, I would be like, right now I'm parked right across the street from the entrance. I would be in the middle of suburbia out here. That's the significance of what was done to stop the completion of the world's largest airport. And they talk about it's just sitting here. Miami-Dade County still, before all of this, allowed private citizens, pilots, to pay a fee to practice their landing and takeoff. So it was used in some form. But, you know, a plane here and there does create noise, but not so great of a noise that, you know, people were very, you know, worried about it. The runway was just here. But now, with all the vehicles going in and out, all the air pollution that's happening with all these dump trucks and all these semi trucks coming in and out, all this, we've seen maybe over 600 times dump trucks going in with fill. We don't know what they're doing with it because nobody's allowed in. That's people of the public. And so we're, you know, my concern is, you know, the destruction that a dump truck just pulled out in front of a car. I'm sitting here watching this happen.
Okay.
So, you know, the improvement has been that it prevented all this unfettered development that was could have happened out here. And it allows nature, you know, the deer, the panther, the bird, have a place to live. And it's protecting our drinking water source by being undeveloped, because all of South Florida, from where I live to Miami, this is their drinking water source. It's the, from what I understand, the largest freshwater drinking water aquifer in the United States. And what that risk is the contamination of that drinking water aquifer that provides fresh water for millions and millions of people here in South Florida.
All right, Betty, we've got about a minute, and then we're going to have to wrap up the conversation. But I want to ask you your efforts and others to educate against the development of this site. What are you hearing from the governor? What are you hearing from others in power with regard to these changes and these efforts?
from what I think yesterday, what I saw where Utmeyer was criticizing some politicians who had concerns over this project and made a comment that encompassed individuals who, you know, would want to even protest this. And according to them, if you're not in agreement with what they're doing, you're a communist. I'm like, I'm not a communist. I care about the environment. Apparently, if we disagree with what they're doing, you know, apparently, you know, we're un-American. But, you know, standing up for the environment and standing up for every living being that's a part of this ecosystem is very important. And, you know, they keep saying that, oh, we're not harming the environment. We're helping it. The governor touts how much he's put towards Everglades restoration. But here he's doing the exact opposite of restoring an area. So, you know,
all right.
Not making sense.
All right. Betty Osceola, I'm sorry we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap up, but you take care of yourself and stay safe out there, okay?
I will. I'll try.
All right. Disclaimer, we did reach out to the Florida Attorney General. We did not hear back by the time we went to air today. And with that, I want to thank all of our guests, Representative Scott Fettgatter, Robert Miller, Jason Salzman, and Betty Osceola for joining today's conversation. We're back on Monday hearing from Andy Murphy. Among other topics, she'll have an interview with one of the winners of the James Beard Impact Awards for his work preserving indigenous land. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our producers are Andy Murphy and Sol Traverso. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Sho McPolin is the digital producer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief operations officer. The president and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm Sean Spruce. We'll talk again soon.
Keshe, guys, don't wait until you have symptoms. Regular checkups may catch health issues early, and conditions like diabetes, heart disease, liver disease, and prostate cancer are more treatable when caught early. Ask your Indian healthcare provider what healthcare checks are recommended for your age and lifestyle. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Elahqua.
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Heaven on earth.